It's still part of the temple sermon. Hear ye the word which the Lord spake unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen. Be not dismayed at the sign of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. Speaking directly here to the house of Israel, learn not the way of the heathen. Now Israel, the ten tribes, had gone into Assyrian captivity. And some little over 100 years before the two tribes went into captivity. So as they went in, the call here is don't learn the way. So we're in this world, but we don't have to be of this world. And although they were taken into captivity, they didn't have to go that way of the heathen. Although we know that they did, but nevertheless, they were called not to. Not to learn the way of the heathen. They had a way of their own that God wanted them to go. And then he said, be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. Speaking of all the host of heaven was considered deity. The moon, the sun, the stars, and every part of heaven. Each one had played its part on the earth. And they all had a title, every one of them. And they were all considered a different part of deity. And all the events of the earth depended upon these powers of these deities. And we don't doubt some of these things. I was reading not too long ago where the moon had a lot to do with our tidal waves and things. But they're not gods, see. And he said, don't be dismayed at the word dismay used twice here comes from a root word meaning to be prostrate, to fall down in fear, or to fall in amazement, or it could be a complete breakdown in whatever you're doing. The thought is downward anyway, whatever. And so don't be dismayed with all of their gods of the heavens and the signs and the displays. And every time there was an eclipse of the moon or the sun, they would all fall down and worship these things. He said, don't do that. Don't fall prostrate to these things. For the heathen do these things, you see. They fall down before all of these. And I believe it's in, I can't remember now. Anyway, for the customs of the people are vain. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands are the work of with a workman with an axe. They deck it with silver and gold and fast it with nails and hammers, that it move not. They are upright as a palm tree, but speak not. They must need be borne or carried, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, is it in them to do good. This is the foolishness of their gods, and it is called the custom of the people. These are vain customs, empty, have no value to them whatsoever. And their custom is that they would cut down a tree out of the forest. They would shape these trees up with the work of their hands, with the axe. They would deck it with silver and gold. They would fasten it with nails, with hammers, that it move not, and they would get them good and steadfast so they wouldn't fall over. And these were beautiful trees, all decorated and everything. And then they would worship these as though they were something special. But he says, these customs, don't you be a part of them. And people that have asked, well, is this the same as a Christmas tree, as we know a Christmas tree? Well, I won't say it is, but it's getting so close to it, it sure smells like it. And I don't even want to get that close to something that I feel is idolatry. I don't want to be even that close to it. Now, that's my personal opinion. If you can do it by faith, that's up to you. But I can't. And I feel that this is a custom of the people. God never told us to do it, and so consequently, it's not scriptural. But these are customs of the people, and they have no value to them at all. We might look up some scriptures along the same line of of making the making of idolatry. Roberta, look up Isaiah 40:18-20. And Alan, Isaiah 45:20. Well, 45:20. And there's other verses, but this is the foolishness of idolatry, that they would cut a tree down, they would do all the work of their hands, and make something out of it, and then worship their own things. Read what Isaiah has to say about that.
To whom then would ye liken God, or what likeness would you compare unto him? The workman melteth a graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold, and casteth silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he hath no oblation chooseth a tree that will not rot. He seeketh unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image. Thou shalt not be moved.
So Isaiah saw similar to this, isn't it? How foolish it is to worship something that you have made yourself. Nancy, there's another verse that ought to be read in Isaiah 41:7. Well, read, 41:7, that's right. Alan, 45:20.
Assemble yourselves and come. Draw near together, ye that are escaped of the nations. They have no knowledge that set up the wood of their graven image and pray unto a God that cannot save.
Assemble? Their gods can't do anything, can they? They can't speak, as we read in our lesson. They can't move, they can't talk, they can't do a thing. So when to be foolish, you'll be just like you getting down before that chair and praying to the chair. And yet, many people worship many things because it comes from their heart. They love things. And they just, many times there's not enough of them to feel that love. Nancy, read that 41:7.
So the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he that smoothed with the hammer, him that smote the anvil, saying, it is ready for the soldering, and he fastened it with nails that it should not be moved.
Read verse 23 also in the same chapter.
Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together.
Can an idol prophesy? Can it tell the things that's going to come in the future? Well, our God can, when we have. And so they take this tree and they put silver and gold all over it and fasten it tight, and they make it upright like as a palm or solid where it won't fall. These trees can do nothing. Jack, 115 Psalms, 3-8. Well, there's another one in Isaiah 2, 46. Evelyn, read 46. We didn't read that, did we? One, I think it's the first verse of 46. Isaiah 46. There's so many that we could read along the same line of the foolishness, you see, of idolatry. Verse 3-8.
But our God is in the heavens. He hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. They have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes they have, but they cannot see. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses have they, but they smell not. They have hands, but they handle not. Feet have they, but they walk not. Neither speak they through their throat. They who make them are like unto them. So it is everyone who trusteth in them.
They're the ones that make it about as dumb as an idol, or they can't do much either. But then Isaiah 46:1.
Bel boweth down, Nebo stoopeth, their idols were upon their beasts and upon the cattle. Your carriages were heavy loaded, and they are a burden to the weary beast.
Read verse 7 too.
They bear him upon the shoulder, they carry him, and set him in his place, and he standeth. From his place shall he not remove. Yea, one shall cry unto him, yet he will not answer, nor save him out of his trouble.
So you see, these prophets know pretty well what these idols are. And I like that they cannot carry. They must need born. They must need to be carried, but our God carries us, doesn't he? So glad we have the God that we do. And then we read here in verse 5, be not afraid of them. No use of being afraid of something material. For they can neither, they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. Now this is what the remnant of Israel will be saying. Actually, this is Jeremiah speaking there, which is a type of the remnant. The principle is the same. We should say this also in our heart and with our lips, that there's none like unto our God. He's our God, and we claim as is our God. The Father is my Father, and he is great, and there's nothing he can't do. And we know what he is. And so Jeremiah, I knew that also. The remnant of Israel will know that in the last day. Verse 7, who would not fear thee, O King of nation? For to thee doth it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nation, and in all their kingdom, there is none like unto thee. Such king we have, a glorious king. Greg, Revelation 15:4 is a good verse along that same line. But who would fear? Now we're looking to a forward day in verse 7. The good rendering of that would be, who would fear in that day the king of nations? Now Nebuchadnezzar thought he was the king of nations for a while, but God showed him he wasn't, because he sent him out in the field like the beast. Our God is the king of nations. We might drop on down in verse 10, and it says he's an everlasting king. So this is our God. He's the king of all the nations. And for to thee doth it appertain, rather. I'm sorry. This title belongs to him, the one that should be feared, this one. Christ only is the object of worship. Read that in Revelation 15:4.
Who shall not fear thee, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou only art holy, for all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy judgments are made manifest.
Yeah, and Maxine, Ezekiel 21:27. That's a good verse along this line too. That Christ in him alone is the king. For as much as among all the wise men and all the nations round about and all their kingdoms. So no matter where you look, who's likened to him? Read that in Ezekiel 21.
I will overturn it, and it shall be no more until he come whose right it is, and I will give it him. Do I have the right verse?
27.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's talking about Christ. Yeah, that's the... Christ is the only one there, you see. There's none other besides him. He's the fulfillment of that. So no one else can be the object of worship other than the Lord himself. All right, verse 8. But they are altogether brutish and foolish. The stock is a doctrine of vanity. They all are altogether, see, all of these, speaking of the wise men of the world, whether Jew or Gentile or who they might be, this kind of corresponds with 1 Corinthians 1, of the wise, the Greeks seek after wisdom, and the Jews seek after a sign. But here the word altogether, as the thought of all of them, part of who it is, are brutish. The word brutish has a thought of fire, it has a thought of to be burned.
My Bible says stupid.
Well, it would be foolish. The word foolish could be translated stupid or without knowledge of anything.
I thought brutish was like an animal.
It has several thoughts. It's used in here and in verse 14, in verse 21, and in chapter 51:17, the same term is used. Verse 14, we have the word brutish again. The stock, as a doctrine. It says, as the thought of their idols, or what the idols are made from. The stock, the beginning of other idols, is a doctrine of vanities. Silver spread into plates is brought from Tarshish, and gold from Uphaz. The work of their workmen and the hands of the founder. Blue and purple is their clothes, and so forth. This Tarshish isn't the Tarshish that Paul came from. You know, he's called Saul of Tarshish. But this Tarshish, many historians believe that to be Tarsus of Spain, in which there were a lot of metal material, a lot of ore down in there that things were taken from. And the Uphaz is another wording of Ophir, in which there was a lot of gold. 45th Psalm talks about the bride being adorned with gold of Ophir. And Ophir was way down in a very southern part of Arabia, way down south. But they took the silver and the gold and all of these things, the workmen of their hands, they melted it in the foundry and made their gods out of it. And we look at this and we say the work of man's hand. And yet people are worshiping the work of man's hands today. It may not be a form of an idol that we think of. And yet there are many forms of idols too, aren't there? Anyway, they're all the work of man's hand. Now, God's salvation is not the work of man's hand. God's way is the work of his hands, and what he does for us, not what we do for him. I used to hear people talk about all the things they do for God, and that isn't important at all. It's what he does that counts, what he does through us, and how we yield to him. But all the works of men's hands are foolishness in the sight of God. But then we in verse 10, but the Lord is a true God. He is the true God. I love that, don't you? The first Lord is Jehovah, and then the word God twice there is Elohim. And so he said, but the Eternal One is truly strong. You could say it that way, because think of the strength and the almighty power of our God. And he's a living God. He's eternal. He'll never change. He's an everlasting king. Oh, such glorious titles it's given unto him. At his wrath the earth shall tremble, almighty, and the nations shall not be able to abide in his indignation. Thus shall you say unto them. Now, verse 11 is written in the Chaldean language. So they were, as they were pressed, when they come to press down, this is what they were told to say unto them. The word them has to do with the Chaldeans. The gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. So their gods would amount to nothing. And if they would have said these things, you see, if Israel would lay hold of a true and living God, the everlasting King, they wouldn't be in the trouble they're in today. They wouldn't have been scattered all over the earth. But instead they crucified the living God, didn't they? They put him to death and rejected him and refused to go his way at all. But they were to stand up against the gods of the Chaldeans. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. And so this is our God, you see. He makes, he holds, and he keeps. He made them, he established them, whether they be unmovable, and he keeps tab on them. He can stretch out the heavens. When he utters his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapor to ascend from the ends of the earth. And he maketh lightning with rain and bringeth forth the winds out of his treasure. Now, God is a mighty God. He controls all the elements in the hollow of his hand. Isaiah says he sits upon the circle of the earth, and he has everything in control. Don't ever be unhappy if the weather don't go to suit us, or the snow gets too deep or everything, because God is in control of these things. But they were giving all the weather conditions to their gods. So God is saying he's the one that does it. When he speaks, things move. Every man is brutish in his knowledge. This is because he makes these idols. His knowledge is completely limited in what he knows. Every founder, the one who makes the idols, the one who runs the foundry to pour them, is confounded by the graven image. For his molding image is falsehood, and there is no breath in him. And you know, it looks like they could see this. How foolish a person would be to think that he could pour metal into a mold to make an idol, and it be able to do anything. There's no breath in it, and all of it is falsehood. But you know, people want to believe what they want to believe, and they lay hold of things that they think is popular, and what everybody wants, what will make them look big. And this is why so much cultism spreads too. They are vanity and the work of error. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. See, God is going to come down upon them, and he's going to use many means. This will be in the form of armies that will come. But this is called God's visitation upon them, their visitation. There will be a time when God will judge the systems. The portion of Jacob, or this is God's portion, we might say, of Jacob is not like them. See, Jacob belongs to God. It is not like them, for he is the former of all things. See, they can only form certain things. But our God that owns Jacob is a former of all things. And Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. The Lord of might, the Lord of power, the Lord of ability, that's his name. And then in verse 11, Jeremiah speaks again. Verse 17, I'm sorry, I looked that wrong. Verse 17, Jeremiah speaks again. Gather up thy wares out of the land, O inhabitants of the fortress. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will sling out the inhabitants of the land at this once, and will distress them, that they may find it so. Gather everything you can gather to come to protect yourself, to come against all of these things. Get all your goods and everything that you can out of the land. Because the Lord says, behold, I'm going to sling. I kind of like that thought. I should look that up in the Hebrew, what it was. But I'm just going to sling out the inhabitants of the land at this once, and will distress them, that they may find it so, or they may understand. Woe is me, for my hurt is wound, my wound is grievous. But I said, truly this is a grief, and I must bear it. We can see what's going on around us. We can see God's judgment just about ready to take over. And it's something that we're going to have to bear. And not only us, but I think this is definitely talking about the remnant in the last days, the overcomers that will be on the earth during the tribulation period. I'm talking about the overcomers of Israel, the remnant of Israel, not the overcomers of the church. They'll be on earth at that time, and they're going to bear all of these things. It's going to be a terrible grief to see their nations come up in trouble. But as Isaiah, God gave them the strength to stand up under it. Verse 20, my tabernacle is spoiled and all my cords are broken. My children are gone forth of me, and they are not. There is none to stretch forth my tent anymore and to set up my curtains, because the pastors are become brutish and have not sought the Lord before they. Therefore they shall not prosper, and all the flocks shall be scattered. The word tabernacle is a thought of a temporary abode, a temporary place, is spoiled. It's brought down. And all the cords and everything is taken away. It's hard to tell about verse 20 whether Isaiah is speaking of himself here. Verse 19 is definitely Isaiah speaking concerning himself. It's a little difficult to tell in verse 20 whether he's speaking of himself or in the place of God. But regardless, it's all gone. See? It's all gone. There's nothing there. The pastors are brutish. They're gone. They've not sought the Lord. They rebelled against him. The heat of their anger even come against him. Behold, the noise of the brute is come, and a great commotion out of the north country, to make the cities of Judah desolate, a den of dragons. I think some translate that jackals. But regardless of what it is, the thought here is the armies, the north country, coming down to make all the cities of Jerusalem desolate, and a place for animals to hide in. Oh Lord, and this is definitely Jehovah speaking to God. I mean Jeremiah speaking to God. Oh Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. This is a good verse to memorize, I think. The way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walketh to direct his steps. The steps of a wise man, a good man, is directed by the Lord. And only he. This will also be the attitude of the remnant during the tribulation period. That the only way of man is in the Lord. It's not in himself. He can't be good in himself. And we'll see that later when we read about the commandments. Oh Lord, correct me. This should be a shout of everybody's heart too. Oh Lord, you correct me, but with judgment, not with thine anger. Not like you're going to have to correct Israel or Judah. People who want the correction of God will not suffer the correction like people who don't want the correction. People who ignore the God's correction, their suffering will be much, much greater. The wrath of God will be much greater. So he says, you correct me with judgment, but not with anger. Please thou bringest me to nothing. As an individual, he's going to see, he saw what he was going to do to the nation. So he wanted to yield a life for himself. Pour out thy fury upon the heathen that know not thee, and upon the families that call not upon thy name. For they have eaten up Jacob, and devoured him, and consumed him, and have made his habitation desolate. So Lord, instead of the judgment here, you judge those heathens is coming down on us. But God was using those heathens to judge his people. It was a necessity that he do that.